Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Oh, hello, trouble. Yes, we here at SBGAN Podcasting Central mean you, our loyal listener. But you're only the best kind of trouble, and we're happy to see you again. Today's guest is Professor Tudor Pop from Cluj-Napoca, Romania's second city. Transylvania, the region of Romania's north in which his hometown lies, has a long and complex ethnic history, so you may know Romanian Cluj-Napoca as Saxon Klausenburg, or as Magyar Kolozsvár. Transylvanian settlements that haven't been named in at least three languages are rare. Professor Pop has been true in his professional career to Cluj-Napoca and to the University Iuliu Hatigheanu. I'm certain that I've mangled that, but Professor Pop will tell me how I should have said it. Uh-oh. There he was awarded his medical diploma in 1995 and, rising through the pediatric ranks, became a professor in 2022. A stroll among Professor Pop's listings on PubMed makes it very clear that whilst he has contributed widely to pediatrics, his international activity centers on Wilson disease, with special attention to its natural history and to accuracy in diagnosis. And that disorder indeed is the subject of the work that he would like us to consider today. A short bibliography is available in the documentation that accompanies this podcast at the SBGAN website. Today we can look forward, I hope, to a recounting of his experience in Wilson disease in Romania, with a review of the guidelines for diagnosis and treatment promulgated by hepatology associations, in particular the newer approaches, the ones that perhaps are not widely available. Professor Pop, it's grand to have you here.
Good evening.
It's your turn.
Good evening. It's a pleasure for me also to be here in this podcast and discussing about Wilson disease.
Now, pronounce for me, please. I'm ignorant of every word of Romanian. Pronounce for me, please, the name of the university that you attended.
The university is named by the founder, Iuliu Hatigheanu.
Okay.
Yes, Hatigheanu was the founder of the university, and he led the medical faculty, and also after this medical faculty, our football team is named. And they had the red caps, and this is the nickname of our football team.
Okay. He was a pulmonologist crossed with an infectious disease specialist, wasn't he? Internal medicine, but mm-hmm. He specialized in tuberculosis, if I've read the right books.
Yes, tuberculosis was one of the main diseases in Romania, and still it's one of the main diseases, so it's an important field that should be covered here.
But you elected to move away from lung disease, infectious disease, and to devote yourself to the liver.
Yes. Yes, I started to love the liver when my professor Miu gave me a team for PhD studies. Mm-hmm. And since then, I focused mainly on the liver, pediatric gastroenterology, but mainly liver diseases in children.
Well, as a pediatric hepatopathologist, I think you made absolutely the right choice. As one of my mentors used to say to me, what is life without the liver? But I'm sorry if that joke is so old that it has whiskers on it, and I apologize to our listeners. Sir, for want of a better approach, let's start with the oldest of the articles that you've supplied. You contributed to a large collaborative study published in 2019, led in Wien by Ferenc Péter, titled Age and Sex, but Not ATP7B Genotype, Effectively Influence the Clinical Phenotype of Wilson Disease. You had nearly 1,200 index patients, 1172, 185 siblings, all with a Leipzig score greater than 4, or 4 and greater than 4. 679 of them were male, 678 were female, and 79%, 4 out of 5, had documented biallelic ATP7B variants. You classified these as having either hepatic, 711, or neurologic disease, 461. Interestingly, you found that hepatic presentation was more common in females, 328 men and or boys, and 383 girls or women, and neurologic presentation in males, 259 versus 202, with substantial statistical significance, a p-value less than 0.001 for both. Now, I'd like to, you didn't really find much of a correlation between variant per se and presentation, but you did find that being a woman tended to mean that you were going to be presenting with liver disease rather than with neurologic symptoms. What is known about hormonal influences on ceruloplasmin metabolism?
First, I have to mention that this work is—it was a huge work of Professor Ferenczi, and I was honored to be part of this study. He was—I have to mention—he was the one who helped us with genetic tests for all our patients. So, since the last for the last 25 years. All our patient children have the genetic background performed by the lab of Professor Ferenczi. This paper was one of the greatest papers of the biggest cohort for studying the natural history of Wilson disease. And because there are trends to see if there is a correlation between variants and the phenotype, the genotype and phenotype in Wilson disease, but the conclusions were that only slightly correlation with the hormone, the sex, the female could be more with liver disease, not with neurological, and the second important thing is what related to the age. So there is clear that the pathological. The liver disease came before the neurological disease with mainly 10 years. So it's not a very strong correlation, but these are the only things. And in the world, there are a lot of groups. They are trying to correlate genotype, phenotype, the sex of the patient with the presentation, but the results are not clear.
Yes, that's pretty much what I took away from the article. But in the 7 years since that was published, has any work been done on estrogens or other sex-associated hormones and how they might alter ceruloplasmin metabolism?
Fortunately, I was not aware about the following of this paper regarding the hormones and the ceruloplasmin, because in the presentation, it's mainly from the clinical point of view, there are mainly the acute presentation with hemolytic anemia could be linked with female sex. So there is a presentation, very severe presentation that is almost 4-1 in a female compared to men. So the one that is with acute liver failure, hemolytic anemia, and renal failure. For that is clear clinical difference. For the
and
others,
in that regard, you were the first author on the article that reported that, which is, of course, acute liver failure with hemolytic anemia in children with Wilson's disease, genotype-phenotype correlations. There you found studying 8 of 51 Wilson disease patients attended by caregivers at your institution, all of whom were girls, had hemolytic anemia. Now, all the patients were from Romania, which might introduce an ethnic bias of some sort. And none was an adult because you were in a pediatric hospital, which might be a stronger point of concern. So you found that no ATP7B variant either predisposed to or protected against hemolytic anemia. 8 divided by 51 is 0.16. My questions for you are, what is the occurrence rate of hemolytic anemia among adults, Romanian or otherwise, with Wilson disease? Is it different from 16%? And if you had studied adults as well, might you have found something different? As regards to the influences of hormones on ceruloplasmin metabolism, if nothing particular has been evaluated in regard to intracellular mechanisms, well, that's how things are. But I was just curious about that. So, hemolytic anemia among adults, how often does that show up as a presentation?
This kind of presentation, for us as a pediatrician, it's mainly in adolescents and when they have a hormonal change. And for example, in Romania, the study in adults are not so extensive as in our cohort in children, but mainly this situation with severe presentation could be linked with adolescents, and also is not an acute presentation. In fact, it's an acute presentation, but the disease, it's already there for a long time.
Most of them are
also with cirrhosis, but they are not found in time. So in our cohort, there are only girls, but normally fifth part of the patients are male. So the number in adults could be similar with the in children, but more men than in our cohort.
Is the mechanism of hemolysis still what I learned in medical school almost 50 years ago, that the release from dying hepatocytes of copper into the plasma produces oxidative stress on the red cell membrane?
It could be the high level of copper in blood that is responsible for this.
Okay. And, I'm glad to learn that not everything that I was taught in medical school is false. A great deal has has become false since I got my diploma. Let's shift to methods of Wilson disease diagnosis. You ask us to consider the work of Collins et al., which was published in Gastroenterology in 2021, as direct measurement of ATP7B peptides is highly effective in the diagnosis of Wilson disease. That study collected dried blood spots from genetically defined Wilson disease patients who were from obligate heterozygotes for ATP7B variants and persons not known to have or suspected to have Wilson disease. Immunoconcentration of peptides eluted from those blood spots permitted the demonstration that when Wilson disease had been genetically confirmed, concentrations of two peptides were substantially lower in the eluates. Low peptide concentrations also were found in approximately 90% of persons in two problematic categories, those with clinically Wilson disease but with ambiguous genetic results, and those with genetically confirmed Wilson disease but normal range serum ceruloplasmin values. That seems like quite an advance in early and indeed even in pre-morbid diagnosis. Are your team in Cluj-Napoca using this approach in problematic patients?
No, we contribute to this paper with samples of our patients, and this is one of the new things that could be used in the future. It's only in the research level. It's a study performed in the United States. And this the need for this kind of studies came for the problems of having a diagnosis later than needed. So for some patients, there is a delay. Even in the clinical, almost clear presentation, there is a delay in the diagnosis due to the low awareness about the disease. But even in big centers, there are cases with not proper results from genetic studies. So so-called VUS variants, so variants of uncertain significance.
Variants of unknown significance, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. This could be tricky because sometimes there is no connection between the doctors and these kind of variants are not reported. So even mm-hmm. In a patient that are clearly with Wilson disease, with uncertain significance of genetic tests, we need another method to be sure. And this kind of approach to measure the direct measurement of peptides could be one that could help the doctors in this kind of patients.
Well, not just in those kinds of patients, sir. When I look at this, I think, good heavens, we're going to be taking 5 or 6 Guthrie cards, 5 or 6 blood spot cards from newborn children's heels any time now, because we're going to have to send one of those blood spots off for Wilson disease screening.
Yes, it's right, but I should mention, this is the ideal thing, but I should mention there is a difference here comparing to other diseases that should be screened at the birth, because here we can have a period to have the diagnosis. So it's not like in other inherited disease of metabolism where you have to act immediately. Mm-hmm. In Wilson disease, you can have clinical signs in years.
True.
So it's a good it's a good method, but probably it's a little bit too high to think that we will have a screening on the birth, because there are other diseases in many countries in Europe and in the world that are not screened at birth that should be screened. For example, here also in Romania, until now we had 3 diseases, but now we will have a program for 20 diseases screened at birth. And I think there are other countries in the world where the screening at birth should be improved for the most important disease. But also for Wilson, as I like Wilson, should be an important thing to have this kind of approach. And then to have time to intervene or to treat with zinc or other medication that probably in the future will be discovered, to treat the patient not to have the clinical manifestation.
That's the problem, isn't it? I take your point. I have to take your point about priorities and funding and the idea of a window for intervention in Wilson disease that isn't available in things like phenylketonuria. But, gee whiz, seeing that so many of the children whom you have attended presented only with cirrhosis, with frank liver disease that may need to be treated by liver transplantation. I can't run the numbers for Romania, but what does a liver transplant cost in one hand and Guthrie card screening in another?
Yes, for sure. For sure, it's more cheap to screen. And this should be the future for many diseases, but I only try to be 100% correct that it's not necessary immediately after the birth. So we could have a program to screen, but maybe at the birth is the best moment, because we can have all the patients, all the
population. And they're captive. They're right there. You've got them. as opposed to having to chase them down. Okay.
Yes, otherwise it will be difficult, because even I can share with you a story of one of our patients was diagnosed with Wilson disease. They came from a village, from mountains, but the clinical manifestation was not very severe. And we diagnose Wilson. We tell them that they have to follow treatment, but due to the low severity of the disease in that moment, they never came for any appointment and anything until we heard about a girl in emergency room with acute liver failure. And when they called us, because in our clinic it was Dr. Bizo. Bizo was one of the main doctors in Transylvania with kidney diseases, and together they, there was the hepatic dialysis performed in their department. So they discussed about this situation, and when they told us the name, I remembered that we even have the genetic test for this patient.
Oh, and we know was, her.
Yes, we know her, but we never saw her for 2 years. And immediately was sent for liver transplantation in Bucharest. And it was a success and it was okay. But you can imagine what happens if they, if she could appear later and with severe disease, as it was 20, 25 years ago, as I, my first patient was with fetal evolution around 21, 22.
Patient died, yeah. Well, you might ask similar questions when we think about a report that you did not propose, but with which you surely are familiar and which I've added to the bibliography. And that is the recent French validation of an assay that has been knocking about for a decade, an assay for relative exchangeable copper, that is to say, non-ceruloplasmin-bound copper in the plasma. The higher that value is, then the greater the likelihood that Wilson disease is present, both because serum concentrations of holoceruloplasmin are low, and holoceruloplasmin is, of course, ceruloplasmin complexed with copper, and because serum concentrations of both protein-bound and non-copper-bound protein are high. It's the non-copper-bound protein in particular that is exchangeable, but that is apparently a highly specific and sensitive biomarker for Wilson disease, as a French team led by, or rather first author of, Diabrani-Usadik et al. That came out in JHEP reports last year, and when I looked at it, I thought, well, isn't this intriguing? And my question for you now is this confirmation of, again, an assay that's been kicking around for 10 years, reason enough to ask your clinical pathologists to introduce that study into the tests that you offer at your institution?
Yes, about relative exchangeable copper, we know since 2009, so more than 10 years.
Oh, yes.
More than 10 years, there were discussions in different papers or conferences, but it appears clearly in the guidelines last year, that the EASL ERN guidelines, that where Professor Piotr Sosha has an important role as a pediatrician. And this REC is the small name for this test, is already included for diagnosis and for monitoring the treatment. The problem is that this test is not available all over Europe. From my knowledge, it's France, Denmark, I think, some other country, Italy also. Emanuele Castro published some data about this kind of test.
Yes, sir.
And this test should be used and should be put together with all the other tests.
Of course.
And also in Romania, I tried to discuss with some laboratory to try to perform this. And finally, probably we'll have to propose them to change their list of tests to include this in the list of tests for Wilson disease. Because there are studies that show a clear difference with these parameters for the Wilson disease patient, for the ones who have not liver disease with other liver disease, but not Wilson. And also you can use this with a limit of 15%, maybe 18%, depends on the study, to use this parameter to follow the how the patient takes the treatment. And here we have problems with teenagers because of the adherence, and this is an important issue.
I remember being a teenager. Oh, yeah. Well, finally, we are approaching the end of our available time, sir. But before we say goodbye and before we ask you for the song the song that we ask everyone to provide, different songs for different people, of course. Before we ask you for the song that you want to share with Espigan's audience as a little bit of Romania for us all, we should tip our hats to that compendium of information on Wilson disease that also appeared last year, the ERN, Clinical Practice Guidelines on Wilson Disease. Now, on the back of an envelope, please, what does that steamroller of an article bring up on which we haven't touched? And what ideas of new work has it sparked for you and your team in Romania and internationally?
These new guidelines should be the start for a lot of collaboration regarding the new diagnosis, the new approach of the diagnosis. If we can read correctly this guideline, we can see that, for example, for neurological disease, we should evaluate the children even without signs of clinical manifestations. Mm-hmm. So MRI should be used in all children over 10 years of age, because sometimes they have some changes before the clinical signs appear. Also, this REC, inclusion of this REC test should be followed by all the ones who care for patients with Wilson disease. And probably it was the first time when in a guideline there was, in a Wilson disease guideline, there was a discussion about the transition from pediatric services,
right,
to adult services.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
this is an idea that is also present in Espigan guidelines for gastro diseases, because it's very important, even not only for Wilson disease, but in Wilson disease mainly, it's important because there is a low adherence in children, and without treatment, all these kind of patients could be with severe disease, severe evolution. We had stories of teenagers that moved to adult centers, and due to the different approach for them, they missed the treatment, they missed the appointments, and with Wilson disease, this could be fatal in a few weeks, few years. So probably, starting from these guidelines, those who are working in Wilson disease, they can change their care and they improve the outcomes of their patient.
Sir, once again, thank you very much for speaking with me today and for making available to Espigan listeners the knowledge that you've accumulated in a long career in Wilson disease. Let's turn our attention, though, to that song. What do you want us to hear?
So, for example, for pop music, there are not so many songs in that could be important to reflect Romania. But because of that, I choose symphony, rhapsody, I can say, the Romanian rhapsodies that was composed by our most famous composer, Enescu, and this rhapsody is filled with all Romanian sentiment, feelings, and is very dynamic. And also one idea is that he composed that at around the age of 20, so related to teenagers. So it was at the age of 20, and it was a problem for him, because it was a big success. It was a the most famous works of him, and that, because of that, it was a curse, because all the other things that he composed came in a second plane, even if he considered there are more important than the first one.
And it's never good to peak early. It's never good to peak early.
Yeah. And he also had the opera, he had the other orchestral work important, but this Romanian Rhapsody remained the main piece for him. And if we discuss about pop music, we can say something about Dragostea Dinte. Maybe all the people knows, all the European people knows about that. Dragostea Dinte was a very popular piece around 20 years. For the last 20 years, it was in all the tops over Europe.
Well, I'm going to claim to be too young to remember him, but I do thank you. I do thank you for bringing to our attention again that wonderful work by UNESCO. Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you very much also.